As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Another episode of Football and Grits. It is Monday, September 13th, and if it's Monday, that means we're talking SEC on the Andy Staples and Friends podcast feed. I am your host, David Ubben, with the man they named the feed after, my co-host, Andy Staples. Andy, some people across the SEC had a better weekend than others. How was your week two of college football?
It was a very exciting week two.
It was.
I don't know that it was as exciting for me as it was for the people of Fayetteville, but it was highly entertaining. I was very impressed with several teams, and the main takeaway I had as I watched what Arkansas did to Texas and what Mississippi State did to NC State, and thought back to what Ole Miss did to Louisville, and then watched LSU kind of struggle a little bit with McNeese State, is there's probably going to be a pretty good team that finishes seventh in the SEC West.
Mm-hmm.
That would be pretty good in almost any other division, but is probably going to finish dead-ass last in the SEC West.
Yeah, I think it's definitely true. I think we sort of smelled that out in the preseason that, you know, other than Vandy, who now is making me question that somewhat, I guess.
They still lost by 20 to East Tennessee State. Now
there's only going to be one team in the SEC that really is something of a walkover, and we'll see what the Vandy team looks like when we get to November. We'll see what other teams look like. But should we start in Arkansas, Andy? For our new
I
SEC takeaways, for our new SEC takeaways column, I started there. You know, before the season, I was able to sit down with Sam Pittman and some other Hogs and some other folks. And Sam Pittman was pretty bullish on his team. He felt like he had earned their trust.
He was pretty hoggish on his team?
Yeah, that's probably more accurate, yeah.
he was neither bullish nor steerish. The Steers...
they had a rough weekend.
The Steers didn't have a great weekend with the Hogs.
The post-game trolling was well done from Arkansas. To the victor go the spoils, as they say. But he was pretty confident. You know, he felt like he really liked this team. You know, they're bigger, faster, stronger than they were a year ago, and he liked the buy-in. He liked how they practice, and he felt like they could be really physical. But I don't want to speak for him necessarily, but I think for myself, and I don't know about you. I did not envision a scenario where Arkansas just bullied Texas for 60 minutes, ran for 333 yards, got pretty much whatever they wanted, and really frustrated Texas. I thought Arkansas had a shot to win this game. I wouldn't have been surprised if they had won it. I did not envision them winning it this handily. I did think Texas would win it somewhat comfortably, but this scenario was not on my dartboard of possibilities. Well, what did you make of the Hogs? Really, I mean, this is the biggest win for them, goodness, in a long time. Certainly since the Bielema era. I'd have to go back and think about it. It's been
probably
a long time.
Probably since the last time they beat Texas. Well, no, they beat LSU
maybe
in 2015.
Maybe the Tennessee game in 07, 08, when game day was there. That might have been their biggest
win. Oh, no. They beat LSU. Probably should have chased off Les Miles then. LSU was going to fire him, and then people who hadn't been paying attention at LSU came in and said, "How could you fire Les Miles?" And then he got a reprieve for a little bit. But no, I mean, they
maybe
had
early
some big
Petrino
wins
era.
Well, I mean, look, they had the borderline erotic game against Texas, 31-7 in
the
Texas Bowl.
Yeah, but that's a bowl game. I don't know, a Texas Bowl. I don't think it means as much as, I mean, I can't remember the last time the Arkansas
the Petrino
fans
teams
the
never beat
while.
Anybody of consequence, though. They won the games they were supposed to win, but they got smoked by Alabama and LSU when they were good. So, I think this is the biggest win in a long, long time. Maybe since that 06 season when they won the West. They just looked amazing, completely bulldozed Texas up front. And, you know, Texas looked really good against a good, well-coached team the previous week. You know, Louisiana had been, you know, winning a ton. They brought back almost everybody. And Texas made it look easy against them. And so I was very surprised at how easy it was for Arkansas. And, you know, now you've got Steve Sarkisian getting the same kind of questions that Tom Herman got. Like, are you sure you know which quarterback you want to play and all that stuff? Sam Pittman's not getting any of that. You know, KJ Jefferson, I think, interesting the way he kind of frames his own story, where he wasn't sure what was going to happen with him, and then Felipe Franks kind of helped him figure out, hey, you can be the leader of this team. And I think it's a great story, and just, you think about all those guys at Arkansas, the Bumper Pools, the Grant Morgans. There was a great video of Grant Morgan's wife running onto the field and jumping into his arms at the end of the night last night. And it was just so much pure joy. And you think about all these guys have been through. They've been through a couple of coaches. Like Grant Morgan started out playing for Brett Bielema. And, you know, they've been through that, the Chad Morris era, which was absolutely horrific for them. And you saw the seeds of what it could be with Sam Pittman last year. But the thing was, we kept saying this, the schedule's so hard, are you even going to notice if they're improved?
Mm-hmm. Well, they noticed that.
We noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, we noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that Sam said to me that you can see in that story is you don't have to have the most talent. You just have to have the best team. A bunch of that comes through trust, and we've got it. I'm not sure there's a quote that more easily encapsulates you know, if you stacked up Texas's recruiting rankings and you stacked up Arkansas,
or one more damning for Texas over the last 10 years.
Also, yes. Also, yes. You know, I don't know that you'd have, you know, something that really more perfectly encapsulates. I mean, Arkansas was the better team. They looked it in the trenches. They looked it in the outside. They looked it under center. I mean, was there a single position where you felt like Texas had the advantage on Arkansas? I didn't see one.
No, because you'd think it would be Bijan Robinson, but it wasn't.
No.
I mean, Arkansas's backs were fantastic.
Four different backs got in the end zone. Big night for them. I just think, you know, it's amazing to me. And I think the funny thing about all this is Sam Pittman, in the process of doing this, I think he's kind of screwing over a lot of new coaches in the SEC because everybody comes in and they preach patience. They say, patience, give us some time. We got to get our guys in there. We got to do all this. We got to do that. We got to do this, you know, and then we'll get there. You know, be patient, be patient. I know a lot of fan bases have heard this across the SEC. Meanwhile, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody who inherited a worse situation than Sam Pittman did at Arkansas. And then he endures a COVID year where he doesn't even get a spring practice. He doesn't get to be around his team. And they're in the top 25 now, Andy, in week 3 of year 2. So every time a coach preaches patience from here until, what, eternity, Andy? patience is not on long supply in the SEC. And
well,
it's
no,
amazing
and, but the
what
thing
he's
is,
done.
Mike Leach has got Mississippi State 2-0. They had a huge win.
Mm-hmm. You know,
we were oohing and aahing over Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss after they destroyed Louisville. We knew they were going to destroy Austin Peay, but you know, we'll see what happens with them. But that's the thing. All those guys who came in last year in the West came in and had success, some success, right? The Leach thing took a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But he seems to have it where he wants it now. We know Lane has it where he wants it now. We know Sam has it where he wants it now. The I'd say the person who might be under the most pressure based on all this stuff is Ed Orgeron.
Mr. Coach O, I was just thinking that. Yeah, yeah. There's not – I'm trying to think. I mean, if there anything below third place in the West, and even third place in the West, he's going to have a tough time answering for that at the end of the season. And you look at – I mean, it is a snake pit, the West. There every single week – everyone's going to be able to beat you, except for Bama, probably.
But okay. But let me ask you this.
Yes.
You watched Texas A&M against Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Is Texas A&M Arkansas a foregone conclusion?
Yeah. I don't think so. Texas A&M and nobody is because the way that they
Texas
play.
Texas A&M Ole Miss is not a foregone conclusion.
No.
Texas A&M Mississippi State, not a foregone conclusion. Texas A&M Auburn, not a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of those where – when Haynes King went down, and we didn't know what Haynes King was going to be either, so we had a very limited sample size with him. But you know, with Zach Calzada, maybe he gets better. He certainly got better as that game went on. But Texas A&M is going to have to rely an awful lot on its defense to get it through, which is crazy because it's got an offensive guru head coach.
Like, yeah,
they should be better offensively.
Let's tackle the Aggies, who. I'll be honest, I didn't think at any point in that ball game that A&M was going to lose that game. I figured they'd find a way. They're just so much better than Colorado. We don't know what to make of Colorado.
I was thinking it was a little tight there before that last touchdown. I mean, it was pretty bad. They could not move the ball.
After the fumble at the goal line, I was wondering if this was not what it was meant to be. But 1 to 10, Andy, how would you describe your own concern level for A&M being what it can be this year, I suppose?
10.
10? Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now.
No. I'm back to square one with
okay, them. So give me your case for why your concern level is a 10. Because I'm at maybe like a 6, maybe even a 5.
They scored one touchdown against Colorado.
Okay.
They have to play Alabama. They have to play Auburn. They have to play LSU. They have to play the Arkansas team that we saw crush Texas. They have to play Mississippi State, which beat NC State, which is better than Colorado. Like, this is not a very positive development for the Aggies. And that said, they did win. Mm-hmm. They can fix it all. There's plenty of cushion and time to fix it. But it is definitely cause for concern. I mean, look, you play like that, you have no chance against Alabama. None at all. And you're supposed to be proving to us that you're not four touchdowns worse than Alabama. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we need to see. But nothing about what we saw on Saturday suggests that they are any better than four touchdowns worse against Alabama.
Fair enough. Now, here's where I will say we got to calm down on the Aggies. This same Texas A&M team, for the most part. I mean, obviously, some pieces, but this team last year.
The four-year starting quarterback and four-fifths of the offensive line? The same team? That one?
Well, okay, sure. But this same team struggled out of the gate with Vanderbilt last year. They are not a team that blows teams away. They are teams that can suffocate really, really good teams, with the exception of pretty much Alabama, maybe a couple others if they have a bad day. Now, I will say, we'll see what the deal with Haynes King is. It's never good when your starting quarterback is watching the second half in a boot. Jimbo Fisher, pretty noncommittal at the end of that on what his future is and where that's at. It doesn't sound like it's a foregone conclusion that it's bad, but we'll see. We'll probably find out more about that early this week when they obviously are back in College Station and figuring out what's going on. This is just a team that is, you know, they're not, again, they're not the Alabama that can bring it every week and be, you know, just a death machine every single week. They don't do that. Alabama's the only team that does
that. That's the only way you get past Alabama. You have to be that.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree, but two things. One, they don't have to get past Alabama. They can get in the playoff this year without beating Alabama. That's just, they can. If they go 11-1 again and Alabama is Alabama, A&M's getting in the playoff.
Oh, they're gonna get an over 12-1 Georgia with a win against Clemson. You think so?
Well, this is both of them
lost to Alabama.
This is where we get back into our with Ohio State getting knocked down. This is where we get into three team possibilities.
Do not give me the three teams. Do not.
Listen.
Do not give me the three teams. It's not
happening. Okay. Do you trust Oklahoma to navigate a Big 12 schedule without tripping up? And they're sitting there at one loss. I don't. Do you trust Oregon to run the table? I sure as crap don't. They're just not as good. They're going to fall around. They're going to trip around in the Pac-12 and lose.
Well, no, if they can go to Columbus and win without their two best players, they're pretty good. So
they're good, but I don't trust them for 12 games to not have a bad game.
Of course,
and
the history of it is
something nonsense.
The last team to go undefeated in the Pac-12 was 2010 Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't happen very often.
Yes.
So it is hard to do. Yeah, I think. What you're saying makes sense. I will not believe it till I do think there's a very real possibility the SEC gets two teams in, mm-hmm. if all goes according to chalk. And look, as far as the playoff goes and playoff expansion, you know, they're going to meet on September 28th. They're going to stick a pin in playoff expansion and say, well, we're going to reevaluate. We need to make sure that everyone has their say. And then when the SEC gets two teams in, they're going to be like, oh my God, what are we doing? We get to expand this thing now.
20-team playoff tomorrow. So anyway, circling back to the Aggs. Saturday was really bad. There's not a lot to take from that. But their defense can keep them in some games. The offense has to figure some things out. That was not great. But I don't think you can gloss over the fact that you did have a Zach Calzada who was really struggling in that first half. I mean, guys are open and he can't get it to them. Then he morphed into something. Some of these third down throws he was making in the fourth quarter to keep them alive were unbelievable. Like, guys in his face, he's off platform, he's just slinging it. Guys making unbelievable catches. Like, they pulled that one out. But so I think you have to account for all those things. The way that this team plays, their style, they don't just blow teams away. They lose their starting quarterback, and this team they've had a tendency to not be the most impressive team every time out. And I don't necessarily think
Alabama, you just gave a dude a raise to $9 million. You don't get to be that anymore.
I don't disagree.
Now you have to be the death machine.
I'm not panicking.
Yeah, you are supposed to be a death machine now, and you're not, and that is a problem.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll see. I don't think the Aggs, they're still, they're somewhere between playoff caliber and death machine. We'll see where on that they fall. But you got to prove it on the field. But I just think, you know, and we still also don't know how good Colorado is. We'll see. I am not real high on them, but we'll see. We don't know. First year coaches, all that stuff.
The Pac-12. Well, he's not a first year coach. It's his second year. So.
Well, first real year.
But Durrell did
I threw
pretty
out
good
a
job
lot of last year, especially in the Pac-12 last year, and Big Ten.
Yeah, we don't want to misjudge the Pac-12. We just saw Oregon go in there and beat Ohio State. You know, Stanford, which lost to K-State in the first week, just steamrolled USC. So we don't know how deep that league is. We'll find out as we go. But again, you just gave Jimbo Fisher a raise. You finished in the top five last year. It's time to start doing that stuff. It's time for you to put the hammer down in games like that. That should not be that hard. If you really aspire to compete for national titles, that game should not have been that hard.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm just saying I don't know that it makes me feel like all of the goals the A&M has are not possible.
Oh, they're all in front of them.
Yeah,
but it doesn't give me the confidence that they can reach them because, look, they got to play that same Arkansas team that we just finished talking about in a couple weeks.
But that's where your line
that's coming right up
comes in handy. It does, but I think A&M will be okay on the lines. They're so good on the lines that really helps them.
A&M's
the
defense
thing is going to be
it's kind of like
for a significant amount of time.
It's kind of like Georgia's defense against Clemson. They're going to keep them in pretty much every game, mm-hmm. except maybe Alabama. But that defense will make them competitive against every single team they play. And so, yeah, it's not as much of a concern. And we'll see, because if Calzada is what he was kind of morphing into in the second half, then maybe it's not anything you need to worry about at all. Maybe it's just he needed to get comfortable, and they're going to be fine. But, again, I need to see that. I need to see them blow out teams that they should be blowing out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, Andy, on the subject of a team who has had its fair share of blowouts, I'm all in on Anthony Richardson. I got to. I know Dan Mullen, he wants to keep playing coy.
You mean because every time he sets foot on the field, he does something amazing?
I've never seen anything like this before, where a guy just can't – every time he touches the ball, the dude is just dynamite. I don't know how he's doing this. Like, I don't care who you're playing. We crunched the numbers, Andy. He has touched the ball, either running or throwing, 22 times this season. Those 22 touches, he turned into 467 yards of offense, 4 touchdowns. Meanwhile, Emory Jones, 419 yards of offense, 3 touchdowns on 72 touches, but 4 turnovers compared to 0 from Mr. Anthony Richardson.
Well, so we saw him pull up at the end of the 80-yard touchdown run. Mm-hmm. The hammy was not straight. It was not good. That probably makes Dan Mullen's decision easier this week about who starts against Alabama. Because I think if Anthony Richardson is completely healthy, you got to work hard to justify starting Emory Jones mm-hmm. against Alabama. Because you need to start the person who gives you the best chance to win the game. And obviously, you know, they think based on practice that Emory's that guy. But if another guy keeps doing something amazing every time he is on the field, at a certain point, you just have to let the person do amazing things on the field.
Yeah.
And so, but if he's hurt, then maybe you don't throw him to the wolves. Now, we'll see if Will Anderson can play for Alabama against Florida. That changes the math on that a little bit too. But this would be really, really interesting if Anthony Richardson didn't pull up at the end of that run, because there'd be, you know, kind of a meltdown, I think, in the swamp when number 5 ran out there instead of number 15. But I'm guessing number 5 is going to run out there. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, based on the situation now, I think that's what's going to happen. But, you know, if Anthony Richardson's not healthy, then you don't want to play him. If he can go, then you give him a shot at a certain point, you know, and if he's doing well, you stick with him. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where Dan Mullen is. If he can play him, you know, if he feels comfortable playing him and Anthony Richardson feels comfortable playing and doesn't feel like he's going to do any damage or anything, then maybe he comes in after a few series, and if he's got the hot hand, you just leave him in, and then he never comes back out. But then, again, the competition level hasn't been great. We don't know what he's going to do against that level of monster that Alabama's going to throw at him. It may look very different. So I think that's the thing is they've got a limited sample size with him, and mm-hmm. you know, what they've seen has been pretty awesome. But can he do that against that type of team? If he can, then by all means. And I mean, Emory Jones was playing the same competition that Anthony Richardson was, and Anthony Richardson did a lot better. So yeah.
This is why I don't buy it's just USF, it's just FAU. This is why those arguments don't really yeah. hold weight. Emory's playing the same guys.
Yeah.
Now, so, I will say, at least
we'll see what happens.
Go ahead.
We will see what happens, because I think the injury changes it a little bit.
Yeah.
You've probably got to start Emory Jones if Anthony Richardson has a bad hamstring, because his ability to run is a lot of the reason why you're so scared of him as a passer, because, you know, he could pull it down and go all the way. And so you have to be aware of that at any given time. But if he's got a bad wheel, then maybe he can't do that.
Yeah, I think the bad news for Dan Mullen is he has to deal with this, which is, like, I'm sure annoying is probably not the right word for it, but just I don't know that he planned for this.
It's a great problem to have.
Yeah, and you have two guys. I don't know, you know, we were You've been hiring Emory Jones and I have been all off season. I kind of need to see more. I wasn't really all in. I felt like, you know, we'll see. But I still felt like he was a guy who could win a bunch of games for you. Good quarterback. Is he the guy to take you to the next level? That was kind of my question. I'm not sure I saw that. Richardson, again, small sample size. We haven't seen that. But that upside, I mean, I see a lot more there. I mean, some of those throws he's making where it's just effortless with people in his face, dropping it in the bucket 40 yards downfield, you're just like, good grief, man.
We know who he looks like. He looks like a guy who used to play at Florida but the best year of his career was at a different school. He looks like Cam Newton. That's what he looks like. I mean, physically, that's what he looks like. Arm-wise, that's what he looks like. Speed-wise, that's what he looks like. And again, it's a very small sample size, and I don't want to build the guy up, and then all of a sudden when he's playing better competition, it doesn't look like that anymore. Mm-hmm. But if he is that special, that's the thing that can vault Florida to where it wants to be, because they don't have the roster to compete with Georgia unless they have an extra special quarterback. That changes everything.
Yeah.
That makes your roster that much better.
Why did Florida beat Georgia last year? They were better at quarterback. Just that simple.
They exactly. I mean, Kyle Pitts helped a little bit, but
nah, just Trask. But no, still, but the point is, you have a guy that can make those plays. Yes.
Yeah. It closes the talent gap considerably. A special quarterback makes that talent gap much smaller. So, yeah, and you just have to find out if that's who he is. Guess what? If he's feeling up to it and he does some of this stuff against Alabama, you've got a special quarterback.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go with him. And I would feel bad if Emory Jones ends up second string because of this, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Like if somebody like that comes along and you've got him, you have to play him. Like, you can't let that go.
And for whatever it's worth, you know, if it does get to that point, I would feel bad for Emory as well. He's waited. He's played, you know, some football, and it was sort of his time now. But if he does get passed up, he's a really good player. And I'm sure if he leaves, he's going to have a lot of folks that want to play, that want him. So
absolutely. I mean, he'd be a starting quarterback in a bunch of places.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. This is just fascinating to me because, again, it's basically what you said. When you have a guy who flashes like this, seemingly every time he touches the ball, you got to give him a chance to see, well, how crazy is this going to be? Because some guys are just that good very quickly. Some guys just are. And is Anthony Richardson that guy? Well, I hope we get to find out this year, Andy. I sense that we'll get a shot at some point to see him.
And here's the thing. If they can beat Alabama, that would be a season-changing win that changes the trajectory of everything.
Dare I say a program-changing win.
Yeah, yeah. But let's say they don't. Let's say Alabama is favored, comes in, wins, and that's how it goes. You've got Tennessee, Kentucky, Vandy, LSU before you play Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You can win all of those games.
With your quarterback, I would say.
Yeah.
I think both guys can win all those games.
But if one of those guys is special, then you play him and he gets ready to face Georgia in a game that could determine the East. And
yeah.
I just think you've got to make that decision probably Tennessee week.
I think that's sort of the tension is that, you know, you have a guy right now in Anthony Richardson that's doing stuff. I have not seen this. Can you remember anybody really doing this over the course of two
games
where we hadn't released?
That's what Cam did.
Well,
now it took,
but not to
it
this
took
level.
Cam, it took Cam a minute to get started because he had that Thursday night game against Mississippi State and everybody's like, oh, he's not very good. Well, it turns out that Mississippi State defense had like 8 pros on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I remember that.
That's why it was hard for that. That's why it was hard for him to move the ball on them. But once they figured out what they had with Cam and how to use him, he was unstoppable. And that's exactly what Richardson has looked like so far. Now, granted, Cam did it against LSU and against Alabama and against, you know, basically everybody he saw. Mm-hmm. And so that's what makes it a little bit different story is, this has not been against that level of competition. It's been against FAU, and it's been against USF.
Yeah.
But, again, if he can do this against Alabama, well, there's no question he can do it against anybody. But let's say he can't. or he struggles, or he's, you know, his hamstring's still tight and he can't really go. You can do it against Tennessee. You may need to do it against Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Kentucky's pretty good.
We'll talk about that a little later.
Will Levis and Liam Cohen and all those guys have come in, and you know, I look at what they were doing with Wandale Robinson on Saturday night. Granted, Kentucky's defense probably isn't as good as it's been in the last few years, but its offense is quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Missouri put up a hell of a fight, but Kentucky stuck it out, and that was sort of the pecking order game for that part of the SEC East. And then when Kentucky and Florida play, it'll be for that next spot in the SEC East. And if you're Florida, that you better put your best team on the field at that point.
Yes. Kentucky can beat Florida, absolutely. But I think that's the question with Anthony Richardson. You might have something special, but you don't know. And the more that you're giving him 5 to 10 touches a game, you know, and he keeps doing stuff, you got to let that number grow. But we'll see. Elsewhere in the SEC East, another quarterback controversy. This one not as attractive, I would say. Tennessee trying to make things work. Joe Milton just struggled early on. He had a nice little run, but they were scheming guys open deep down the field. Pitt wanted to stack the box. They wanted to play man on the outside, and guess what? Tennessee's got some really fast receivers that were getting over the top, and Joe Milton was overthrowing them, sometimes by sizable margins. I have not seen that. It was like six. It was at least six in less than a half of balls that he had open receivers, and he was overthrowing it. He eventually hurts his knee, and we see Hendon Hooker step in instead of Harrison Bailey. Hendon Hooker, 15-21, 188 yards, two scores and a pick. Runs for 49 yards. They don't get it done against Pitt, but now he's got a decision of his own. He was sort of noncommittal about Joe Milton's injury, which he said he pulled him based on health, not on performance, which we'll see if that was the right call. But if you're Tennessee, I mean, how much longer do you sort of let Joe Milton keep trying to find his rhythm down the field before you say, okay, Hooker's moving us a little bit more consistently? I mean, they don't have one this week. They've got an FCS team in Tennessee Tech, but you've got to figure that out before you face Florida.
Yeah, and the thing is, if Milton's still overthrowing people or struggling against Tennessee Tech,
mm-hmm.
then you'd probably go with Hooker. You want Hooker to take maybe a little bit better care of the ball, but other than that, he was moving them down the field. He gave them a chance to win the game against Pitt, and Pitt's not mm-hmm. bad. Pitt's yeah. a pretty good team. So I take the guy who moves the team. Hooker strikes me as a tougher quarterback who'd be tougher to defend because he can run.
It's sort of complicated, I think, because Tennessee, Tennessee's ceiling, I think, is a lot higher with Joe Milton. I think he can make them into something really, really great. But if he can't do the basic things you got to do, namely hit open receivers,
right.
that's
yeah,
a
if he's
problem.
Missing open receivers, it doesn't help you. It's,
exactly.
You can have all the arm in the world, and it doesn't matter. Like,
mm-hmm.
I just go back to the Russell Wilson, Mike Glennon example. Mike Glennon is exactly what an NFL scout dreams of in a quarterback, height-wise, arm-wise, like the ball sizzles coming out of his hand. Russell Wilson is a better football player. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson is better at actually playing football. At the end of the day, you have to choose the guy who's better at actually playing football. And
yep.
that may be Hendon Hooker in this case.
I think we'll see. It's surprising because, like I said, I think – if you're Tennessee, you want Joe Milton to be great. I think he has all these tools that can make you into something special that Hooker doesn't really wow you. He came to play for the previous staff. It felt like he was a little bit of a forgotten man. You have Harrison Bailey who, you know, comes in as a high four-star that people are all about, and he ends last season as a starter. Hooker comes in. Everybody else, you know, leaves. A bunch of folks leave, and then you have the spring. The staff doesn't seem that impressed. They add Milton. And for Hooker to be here locking down that number two spot, we haven't seen Harrison Bailey yet this season. So, you know, they're opening it up. Josh Heupel opening it up this week in practice. We'll see where it goes. But they got to figure that out next week, Tennessee Tech. Andy, we talked about Kentucky earlier. I think if you have not watched Kentucky, if you've only watched the highlights of Kentucky, you might think – that this is a totally different offense. And in some ways it is. But they still do the things that make them great. I don't think people realize with all the highlights that they had a 200-yard rusher against Missouri.
Oh, Chris Rodriguez was awesome.
He's still hauling.
And he and that line lets you control, which, look, they had to control that game. Their defense did not give them as
very
good of a chance as it should have.
Very concerning.
And look, right, Connor Basilak is a really good quarterback. I think maybe when all is said and done, Connor Basilak of these, we'll see what happens with Anthony Richardson, but Connor Basilak is probably going to be one of the more sought-after draft guys among the current SEC.
Am I crazy, or did it feel like he grew like 2 or 3 inches from last season?
I said the same thing. Maybe it's the number.
Yeah. Last year I kind of remembered him as like not squatty, but like not like a hulking guy. And then all of a sudden I'm watching this thing, I'm like, oh my gosh, like what is happening with this dude? Like I didn't know if I was going crazy or what. I don't know. Maybe
no, you were not the only person. I said the same thing. I was watching that game. I was like, when did he get massive?
Yeah, because he is big. But yeah, I think Missouri, you know, a pretty good team. I just think they're just not as good as Kentucky. How good Kentucky can be, I don't really know. But I know that they can beat just about everybody south of Alabama. I feel pretty confident.
I don't think they can beat Georgia.
I do. I do think they can beat Georgia. I'm not as high on Georgia as you are, Randy. I'm just not.
I think Georgia's going to win the national title, so you probably can't be as high as me.
Yeah, there you go. But ultimately what this team did is they added the capability to be something else while sort of keeping their identity. They still want to run you over. They still want to lean in behind that offensive line. But Will Levis, you know, when he gets some opportunities, he only threw the ball 18 times through the night. Andy against Missouri. They wanted to control the line of scrimmage, and they did that.
And the thing is, he's a good runner himself.
Yeah,
and
you have to
what
account
that
for him
does
in his own read
game. Yeah. When you have a really good line, a great back like Rodriguez, and then a quarterback who can run the ball, it makes for very efficient passing stats. It's the Marcus Lattimore, Connor Shaw situation. Mm-hmm. You know, Connor Shaw was throwing to wide open receivers because when he put the ball in Marcus Lattimore's belly, you're terrified. You don't know which of them is going to take it, or is he going to pull it and throw? And that's where defenses are facing Kentucky right now.
Mm-hmm. We looked up the numbers. Only 4 quarterbacks this year in all of college football have more completions longer than 30 yards than Will Levis does with 6. 4 of those went to Wandale Robinson, and only 1 receiver. Texas Tech's Eric Ezukanma. We'll get the One True Pod guys
on.
We'll
have to get the pronunciation guide, yeah.
Yeah. Has more this year. And like you said, it's efficiency. They're not throwing the ball 50, 60 times a game. They're not going to do that this year. But the ability to do that, it just changes everything for Kentucky. They felt like they had such a low ceiling. They were fun to watch because they would suffocate teams last year, and if they got on top of you, you just could not climb back over them. But this is just, it just changes everything for them, and it raises their ceiling significantly. And I'm intrigued to see because they're going to mess some people up this year. I don't know that they're a 10-11 win team. I don't know that that's Kentucky. But you don't want to play them. And you know, there might be a stinker, a clunker around with Kentucky. We haven't really seen that side of them just yet. But they're with the potential that they have and what they can do, I mean, they're really fun and really, really dangerous.
I would agree. Now we've just got to – can they get a little bit better on defense? Maybe get back to where they were on defense. If Kentucky is where they were on defense the last 2 years, with this offense, yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. Now, you said you think they can beat Georgia. I'm not sure they can. I thought Georgia was really impressive on Saturday, starting Stetson Bennett, which was interesting because you know, everybody kept saying, "Well, there's a chance it's going to be Beck," and I think Beck's private quarterback coach came out and said, "Oh yeah, he's starting." I'm wondering if Kirby's like, "No, we can't have that.
Yeah,
we're starting a mailman.
We're playing and UAB this week. Look, I think we got this." Yeah,
listen, UAB is not a 56-7 losing team.
I thought it was going to be really low. I thought it was going to be like a 24-6 sort of game. I thought it for them to hit some of those big plays, I was really, really surprised. But props to Stetson Bennett.
So here's the thing. What happens when it's JT Daniels is back and then Dom Blaylock's back and then Kyrus Jackson is completely healthy and maybe George Pickens is back? Like, that defense is not changing.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes a very formidable task for anyone, including Alabama.
I agree with you. The potential is high. You just got to do it every week. You got to show up every game. And Georgia, I just don't trust them in the same way. I think their ceiling...
They haven't earned your trust.
Exactly. Their ceiling is not that far from Alabama's. I really don't think it's that far. But Alabama...
Their ceiling is the same as Alabama's.
I don't know. Alabama has a higher ceiling. I totally disagree with you on this. I think Bryce Young's a better player than JT Daniels. They don't have quite the same number of weapons, but I think their defense is just as good. But I think Bryce Young gives them the difference. And again... Alabama doesn't have clunkers. Alabama doesn't come out
Alabama beats the living crap out of everyone.
It seems like they hit their ceiling almost every game. It's insane, but we'll see. I'm really excited. I mean, obviously, you know, if we get that Georgia Bama game, it's gonna be a good one. I am looking forward to it. But I'm not sure anybody had a better Saturday than Stetson Bennett. There was some booing when they introduced him. Would you say it's fair to say that a lot of fans would probably blame Stetson Bennett for Georgia underachieving last year?
Yes, and that's completely unfair because totally he was never supposed to be put in that situation.
Yes.
Jamie Newman was supposed to start in quarterback and he bailed. So
boo him.
You don't put that on Stetson Bennett. I mean, he was there, he did the best he could. Had you in the lead at Alabama at halftime. I mean, it's not like he was terrible. It's just that his ceiling is lower than JT Daniels' ceiling, and that's fine. That defense makes up for an awful lot on the other side of the ball, so you don't have to be perfect over there. It's just that to get where you want to go, and look, we talked about Anthony Richardson before. Let's say he is that special player that we said he might be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when you have to be Georgia at your optimum level when you play Florida. Like, you got to get there. And so the fact that they had this offensive explosion under Bennett, I think, gives me confidence that when a healthy Daniels comes back, that they are going to keep evolving offensively, and they are going to have games where they can blow people out. Because that's been the problem with Georgia, is they could only beat you one way before.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama can beat you every way. That's what
and
makes
they do
Alabama
beat
so
everyone
special.
Every way, yeah. Most weeks.
Right. Any way, but also, you could try to drag Alabama into a certain kind of game. They'll beat you at that game.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, if they can't drag you into their type of game before this, if they couldn't drag you into that type of game, they were in trouble because they couldn't adapt. And now it seems like they may have a little more adaptability. And if that's true, if they can win a game 45-42 or also win a game 24-17, that's the kind of team that can win a national title.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Andy, a trivia question for both you and our illustrious listeners who have just incredible taste in podcasts. Do you know who the number one scoring offense in America is right now, Andy?
Would it be the Ole Miss Rebels?
It would not be. It'd be the Auburn Tigers, Andy.
Oh, that's right, the Auburn Tigers.
Do you know who the number one scoring defense in the country is right now?
The Auburn Tigers.
It's the Auburn Tigers, Andy. 5 points a game coming off of a shutout.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. They have not played anyone yet. We're well aware of
this. And they play someone now.
They got someone this week. They got game day. They got Penn State. I believe, am I crazy? Is this the whiteout? Is this the whiteout game that they're walking into?
This is the whiteout game. Absolutely. Yes. And you've got a Penn State team that has beaten Wisconsin already, so they already have this type of game under their belt. And I'm excited to see this because...
Yeah. I don't like Auburn in this game, but I want to see it. They can win this game, and I think there was so much... people were not really all in on this Brian Harsin hire. There's a lot of raised eyebrows, a lot of fit questions. And I tell you what, Andy, you know what makes those go away in a hurry? Go win a ball game like this. Go win a ball game like this, and people will shut up, and they'll be like, oh, you know what? He fits in there just fine, Andy. You know why? Because winners fit everywhere. That's exactly right. That's what I hear. And I don't know what to make of this Auburn team. They've looked pretty good. They had a couple defensive scores against Alabama State. It was fine. It was whatever.
Consider the competition, though. That's it.
I know. We have not
seen anything yet from them.
I don't know what to make of them yet.
Bo Nix looks more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, consider the competition. But we'll find out, because Penn State, when they played Wisconsin, they were getting after Graham Mertz. They're going to get after Bo Nix a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And how does he handle that? Because in the past, he has not handled that very well. But if he can, if he's poised in the pocket, if he gets the ball out on schedule, there's no reason Auburn can't go up there and win that game. No reason at all.
I want somebody on Auburn's practice field to just have a giant, super loud air horn, and every single time Bo Nix throws off his back foot, they just hammer it. Stop throwing off your back foot, Bo. Step into the throw. Every time he throws off the back
Mike
foot.
Mike Bobo might try that. I think Mike Bobo might take that idea.
It's not a bad idea.
He'll appreciate that.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, give Bobo the air horn. He just stands there and right behind him, maybe right next to his ear. If he throws on his back,
I mean, this is the thing. Like, you think you know a lot of things come into the season, and you just don't know. I think I knew that I did not have really high expectations for Auburn, and maybe we're right. We'll see. But these are the games that reveal it, and I really do look at every football season kind of like a mosaic, and that. Early in the season, there's all these results that don't make sense. You're like, well, how can that happen? They're ranked here, whatever. By the end of the season, when you zoom out, they're almost always make sense. They almost always, yeah. The results
well,
in picture.
People need
sense.
To understand the rankings. Like, people get so upset over preseason rankings or early season rankings.
They don't matter.
Understand, guys. They are for entertainment purposes only.
Literally.
And I know everybody thinks that what. It's set in stone and nothing ever changes, but I've covered the sport a long time. The rankings change based on the results. If you don't like them this week, they'll be different next week, so don't worry about it. And with Auburn, we don't know what they are. We probably still won't know what they are after they play Penn State. We probably will have a much better idea what they are after they play LSU, mm-hmm. because they'll have played Penn State and LSU.
Are they the biggest mystery in the SEC right now? And the combination of having
yes.
a first-year coach, and I'm trying to think, everyone else has kind of been tested. They're the only team that really hasn't
Florida
seen
hasn't.
Anything. Yeah, I guess that's true. We kind of know who Florida is, but you're probably right. I'm just fascinated to see it. What does Auburn have? We'll find out. I mean, I don't think you could learn on a bigger stage. Beaver Stadium, Happy Valley, Whiteout, Game Day. Welcome to the SEC, and also kind
of
welcome
think
to
about
the
Big Ten,
but welcome
none
to the Power
that's
5,
bother,
Brian Larson.
Yeah, none of that's going to bother Auburn players, though. That's
no.
Oh, it's a whiteout. Okay, I've been to whiteout at Penn State. It's really cool, but it's not any louder than a night game at LSU or mm-hmm. an Iron Bowl, either at Auburn or Alabama, or a game at Sanford Stadium. Like, it's loud, but Auburn players have dealt with worse, you know? Mm-hmm. They've been to this. They were in the swamp 2 years ago. That was loud. Like, none of this will intimidate them. The only thing that they need to worry about is the very good other team on the field.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Andy, before we go, you've made some travels the last few weeks. Any meals we need to hear about other than the banana? You housed the banana. The twist ending. I was not prepared for it. Have you eaten another banana with a peel since the one that you were contractually required to consume?
Well, I ate another one on that podcast. and then walked outside, and my kids were saying, you know, we heard you. It sounded like you liked it. I was like, yeah. And then I grabbed one and ate one in front of them just to show them.
So three down.
Yeah. It's good. It really is.
I must say I'm really legit intrigued now. The problem that we run into is I do not eat bananas in my daily life really ever. So I'd have
See,
to, so
I
I'd
do.
Have to
I
go
like
out.
Bananas a lot.
Yeah, see, that I just don't really eat them. I don't dislike them, but I just don't ever make a habit of like having them around the house to eat. If I was making a fruit power rankings, I'm not sure bananas would make my top 10, but I can eat them. But you got me intrigued, I must say. How thoroughly do you wash the outside?
I probably didn't. I don't care. Like, I have a cockroach immune system, so I don't worry about that stuff. Like, I eat stuff off the floor. There's a 5-second rule for everybody else in my house, but for me, it's like, 5 hours.
That sounds right. That sounds about right. Well, I'm not going to commit to doing it, but you've got me intrigued. The problem is there are not a lot of situations in my daily life in which I'm presented with bananas in front of me. And making a special trip to just, can you even buy one banana at the store? Is that a thing you can do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because they're just weighing it. It's, you buy it by the pound. They type in the little number for a banana, and you can pay your 29 cents, and there you go. So,
all right. Well, that's maybe.
I have had some better meals than the banana, though. So on Saturday, I went to Blood Brothers Barbecue in Houston. It is spectacular. So they do specials every day here, where basically the Blood Brothers refers to the three guys who founded it, and they're not actually, biologically related. They're just best friends from way back. All of them come from different ethnic backgrounds, and so their families cooked differently growing up, and they've thrown all of this in together. And so each day kind of has
British sausage. Are we throwing some blood sausage in the mix?
No bangers and mash. No. But so Saturday is the more Korean day, and ooh. So they had Korean pork belly burn ends.
Oh my god! Kind of a big Korean food like a fan
hot,
over here.
Yeah, like a hot sweet sauce on there.
Oh my god!
It was outstanding. And then they also had a sandwich, and this did not fit the theme, but this is a sandwich that they sell on Saturdays called the Terry O'Toole, and it's jalapeno maple bourbon bacon with smoked turkey on a pretzel roll.
Now that's that's quite a combo. I'm usually not a turkey guy in general. My wife, big turkey person.
The smoked turkey. These are giant thick slices of smoked turkey. This is not cold cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the best. Was beef rib. They do beef rib on Saturday. Nothing fancy about this. Salt, pepper rub, perfectly smoked beef rib. It is gourmet food. If you at a white tablecloth restaurant, you order short ribs, you're paying, $50 for the entree. $26 a pound for beef rib. You got to pay for that long bone, but it's okay. It's well worth it. This was a spectacular beef rib.
Well, noted. Blood Brothers Barbecue. The next time I'm in Houston, I got to hit it up. Andy, I think that'll do it for this week's Football and Grits. Big ball game this weekend. We'll see. We'll learn a lot about Auburn. Pretty fantastic Saturday of ball games. I'm very excited. This season has been super fun already. High quality of play. Lots of storylines. I can't wait. We'll be here chatting about it next week. Whatever we learn about Auburn on Saturday, we're going to talk about it on next week's Football and Grits. For Andy Staples, my co-host, I am your host, David Ubbin. Thank you guys for tuning in. Again, every Monday, subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. Have it delivered directly to your device. We'll see you again on Monday for more Football and Grits, talking about the SEC on the Athletics Podcast Network. Thank you.